My name's Axel Crook, and I'm an alcoholic. How do y'all like me so far? When Dick said 9 months ago I spoke in Moreno Valley, I got nervous as hell. You know, things happen in 9 months, and I didn't remember anything about me, you know, who it was or what or anything like that. I was going to 9, even they had pictures. I want to explain something. I got a sore finger. A lot of y'all thought is that I've had a bad habit of picking my nose and I'm trying to break myself up, but that's not it. It's just a bad finger. I want to thank Chris and the committee for inviting me down here. And it's just been great. I played in the golf tournament yesterday, and we played a warm-up round yesterday in the wind. And I shot better than I played today, but I've got my golfing crony sitting back there someplace holding up the cue card so I can see what I'm supposed to say out here. I want to welcome the new friends. If you're here for your first roundup or here for your first time in an AA, and you feel kind of bad about being here, you shouldn't feel bad. You know, alcoholism and AA is so well accepted nowadays that we're having trouble keeping the social climbers out. Alcoholism goes back a long ways. The first recorded alcoholic was Adam. He turned to God and said, "She made me do it." My sponsor told me that Christopher Columbus was an alcoholic, and my sponsor should know. He knew Christopher personally, you know. They say, you know, when Chris left Spain, he didn't know where he was going. He got here, he didn't know where he was. He got back home, he couldn't tell anybody where he'd been. And he did all that by borrowing money off of a woman. Well, a lot of us suffer from dual problems. I do. Not only am I an alcoholic, I'm also an Okie. The first three words that an Okie baby learns to say is Mama, Papa, Bakersfield. You know, I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous on March 20th of 1971, and when I got here, they told me, said, "You've got to change your attitude." AA stands for Altered Attitudes. We had a ball back home in Ardmore, Oklahoma, a big football. You know, Oklahoma's a big football state. The University of Oklahoma football team's on the honor system. Yes, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. Last year, the only way that you could hear a football game was on a police scanner. But we had this big old football player. He married a little bitty girl. You know, get things set straight on the way. Now, you got to get these women straightened out, first of all, on the very first night. He told her, he says, takes his trousers off, tells her, says, "You put those on." She held these big old trousers. "Well, honey, I can't wear those." "Is that right?" "Yeah. I wear the pants in this family. Don't you ever forget that." Boy, he put her, didn't he? She came back to bed. She's getting ready to come back to bed. She comes over with this big strap football player. She takes her panties off. She tossed to her and said, "You get in those." He held these little old panties up. "Honey, I can't get in those." "Is that right? And you want it or do you change your attitude?" I really and truly didn't intend to become an alcoholic. It was just one of the fringe benefits of me drinking too much, I think it was. Now, if this disease that we suffer from of alcoholism is hereditary, that I was doomed to become an alcoholic. Now, back in Oklahoma, when everybody still wore their guns, and my paternal grandfather and his brother, they were all playing cards, and they were drinking, and they got into an argument, and my paternal uncle outdrew my grandfather and shot and killed him. had an uncle died an alcoholic death in a veterans hospital in South Oklahoma, a married man who had four sons and one daughter. At the time that he died, none of his kids cared to be at his bedside. Now, I have a half-uncle who's on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in Fresno, California, and he's been sober for over 20 years up there. And I firmly believe you can stay sober in Fresno for 20 minutes. This program's going to work. My dad was a drinker. I remember growing up in Oklahoma, my mother and my dad used to have some real bad, hellacious arguments. And a lot of times, my brother and I, we were pitted with this thing, if we separate, who will you go with? Will you go with me? And my dad said, would you live with us? And it was very traumatic. But I want to tell you, my dad, the last 6 months of my father's life, he didn't drink. But 4 years ago, last month, my father died of cancer. And I started drinking when I was a young kid, about 13 years old. And I think that's a good age to start anything, you know. There's a group of kids in school that everybody liked them. Well, they were popular. Yeah, I wanted to be like them, but see, I wasn't popular. My daddy was a truck driver, and my mother was a cook at a city school, and I didn't like that. I wanted to be someone who lived in the northwest part of Ardmore, not in the southeast part of Ardmore. They drank. So if I can just be in the same bars where they're drinking and I can drink alongside of them, I could become one of them by association. Well, the first time I drank, I got drunk. I went home and laid down in bed, and a strange phenomenon happened in Ardmore, Oklahoma. My bedroom, which is really one of our more stable rooms in the house, for some unknown reason, it started going round and round and round. And I wasn't. They say, I'm a novice, but I learned something, you know, in future life. What you do is you take one foot from underneath the covers and stick it on the floor. And you stabilize yourself in the room. Well, as that puppy goes round and round and round, you'll go round and round and round. But I ended up in the bathroom heaving up my guts. And awakened my mother, precious God-fearing. Well, my mother, Alex, and some of these people out here have known me for a long time. They know my mother. She's a sweetheart. If God's put an angel on this earth, it's my mother. I'll guarantee you that. And she came in, here's her baby boy, drank from the toilet, and he was drunk, and he was sick. Mother was, she couldn't stand the thought of seeing that, you know. She just crushed. She woke up Daddy. Well, Daddy wasn't crushed, but he was mad. So what Mother and Daddy decided to do is go to the bootleggers, buy a pound of bourbon, bring it home, make me drink it. Their logic, I'm already so sick from drinking bourbon, I'm going to get more sick. And in future life, when I got ready to drink, I would remember how sick that I'd gotten, and I wouldn't drink so much. You know, that's the first shit-shaded aversion program ever introduced in Oklahoma, right there. That kind of therapy today will cost you $30,000 a month. And I'm here to testify that it works to some degree. I developed a dislike for bourbon. I changed to scotch. I used to invite the girls up to my apartment with scotch and sofa. I didn't have a sofa, and boy, were they ever floored. They all told me that joke would go over big around here, you know. He also told me I shot a good game of golf, too. That's how he lied. Now, I'd sign up these good-looking girls. When I was drinking, they were all good-looking. I can honestly tell you, folks, that I never went to bed with an ugly woman. I woke up with a bunch of them, though, you know. I never could understand how a 10 at night could be a 3 in the morning, you know. You wake up with a coyote hangover. Now, if you folks who are new and don't know what a coyote hangover is, let me tell you. It's when you wake up in the morning and you see this thing laid on your arm. You don't wake them up. You chew your arm off and walk off down the street. If you're a real cautious drunk, you'll chew the other arm off so it'll never happen again, you know? I've turned to some of these lovely things next morning. I said, "My God, who are you?" Hoping she wouldn't say, "The bride." Big smile will come across her face. Not a tooth in her head. She'd throw her arm over on me. Boy, I hope that was her arm. Last night, you long calling Lake Okie. You call me your Yellow Rose of Texas. I have never in my life seen anything fade and wilt so fast. Now, I had a brother who used to take care of me. Richard was 15 months older than I am. For you folks who can't add right fast, that's a year and 3 months. And he used to take care of me. Richard would find me out and I was drunk. He would take me on the country roads outside of Ardmore, Oklahoma. And Richard used to run me up down those country roads, give me some symptoms of sobriety before he let me go home. Because, see, he knew how it hurt Mother and Daddy to see me in that condition. Well, I graduated from high school in 1953, and I went off to college 180 miles away from Ardmore, Oklahoma, to Stillwater, Oklahoma. I passed the social fraternity. I made my grades. I was initiated. And I became sociably accepted. Now, where I came from in life, that was a big deal, to be sociably accepted. I had a fraternity pin. I wore on my lapel. I said, "Boy, they like me." I graduated from college in 1957. I got my B.S. degree. Now you know why I'm here. Now I started teaching school, a class in high school, Oklahoma City, teaching speech and drama. Now in Oklahoma, you can talk like this and teach speech. As a matter of fact, it helps a whole lot if anybody wants to understand you. I hated school teaching. The worst job that I'd ever had in all my life. The only job I'd ever had in all my life. I was getting ready to quit teaching when I found out they had sick leave. School teaching's not a bad job, you know. And I accumulated sick leave, and I'd do what any practice alcohol could do. I'd go out and get drunk. So one night I was drinking up town pit on North Walker in Oklahoma City, and three of my students came in. I'm sitting at the bar, and I'm drunk, I'm crying. Boy, I cried a lot when I got drunk. And I used to think that now, if I cried a lot when I get drunk, I won't have to go to the bathroom near as often. That don't work. If it did, Tammy Faye Baker would never go to the bathroom. Well, my students took me home. One of them stayed all night long to see that I didn't drink anything else for the rest of the night and to see that I made the class the next day. Well, at the end of one semester, I decided that school teaching was not for me. The Oklahoma City school system said the same thing. So I'm here to tell you all tonight that I am a retired school teacher. No benefits, I just retired. I went back to college. I started working on a master's degree. My daddy, he retired me from college. He quit sending me money. He said that I should go to work. I thought manual labor was the president of Mexico. So I got a job as a disc jockey in my own hometown, a little radio station there. I was there about 6 weeks, and Lyndon Johnson became president, so they bought the TV station. They transferred me to Sherman, Texas as news director of a TV station. This really This is a program of rigorous honesty. Now, let's see how rigorously honest some of you folks are. Are there any Texans out there? Yeah. I want to tell you something. Any big Texans out there? Texas is the only state that's mentioned in our big book. It says we reached a state of incomprehensible demoralization. They mentioned it twice. They said we seem to have been in a state of confusion. Sherman, Texas is a beautiful aristocratic city in North Texas with two problems. Number one, the Methodists own it. Number two, they borrowed the money from the Baptists to buy it. Those folks don't drink. 18 miles north in Denison, Texas, now, those people knew how to live. They had packaged liquor stores. They had beer joints with shuffleboards in them. So I moved to Denison, Texas. I started doing two newscast days, 6 o'clock news and 10 o'clock news. It became progressively hard for me to do the 10 o'clock news. I was prone to have sinking spells. They always kept a commercial queued up for me because they never knew when I might go out of sight. They even tried to put me in a chair that had arms on it, you know? So my boss came to my rescue and said, "Ansel, I know what your problem is, and I want to help you. You're working too hard." So he took me off 10 o'clock news and put me on 12 noon news. So I was doing 12 o'clock news and 6 o'clock news. Well, once I started doing the 12 o'clock news, that meant I had to get up early in the morning. Then it became progressively hard for me to do the 6 o'clock news. Again, my boss came to my rescue. In the afternoon, for an hour and 45 minutes, there was a kiddie program called Popeye Time with Uncle Ansel. Twenty-five kids a day, 5 days a week. No, Uncle Ansel, he used to go over Medicaid at times. Had a dairy product sponsoring the show. Try to sell kids a glass of milk without barfing, you know. Kitties. I want you to drink this Calvert's fried milk. It's going to make you feel good like old Uncle Ansel does most of the time. Needless to say, the dairy should get that drunk off the air. The mothers even wrote the TV station, "Uncle Ansel breathed on my Johnny's hair, and I think he's going to be bald-headed for the rest of his life." So again, my boss came to my rescue. And I'm still doing the noon news. Immediately following the noon news, for an hour and a half, there was a woman's cooking show. And I end up as the "Hand me this, Ansel, darling. Hand me this, Ansel, darling." And the bad part about doing that show was Ansel, darling, was having to eat that stuff she was cooking. One day, Dorothy said, "Ansel, darling, hand me the vanilla extract." And I did. And it was a pint bottle. Dorothy didn't use all that bottle. But Uncle Ansel did. I took the bottle home and I refilled it with scotch. I went out there the next day. I did that show again. I carried that bottle home and I refilled it with scotch. I did that show on a daily basis, 5 days a week. for 6 years. My boss came to me one day and said, "You like this show, don't you?" I said, "I love it." Well, I'll tell you the story. I still, my brother, he had an eye problem, and he didn't get to start school when he's supposed to. So he and I went through school together, grade school, and we graduated together. And after graduation, he went to service. I went to college. When he finished his tour of duty, he came back to a little junior college at Tishomingo, Oklahoma, which is about 147 miles away from Ardmore, Oklahoma. And I went up there in the pretense of covering news story, but what I really went up there for was to tell my brother and show him how fantastic I was. Well, after dinner, we got into a little barroom athletics. I got to look at it. It's 9:30 at night. I'm to be 147 miles away in 30 minutes. Well, I'm fast, but I'm not really that fast. So I got on the telephone and I called the TV station, unaware that my boss was listening on the extension. As far as I know, everything's fine. They're going to cover for me, and don't worry about it. Somebody's going to do the news. And I go back to the bar, and I get through at 2 o'clock in the morning. They close the bar. I got a case of beer to go because I had to drive 147 miles. I'm driving along a little stretch road between Medill and Tishomingo, Oklahoma, and I got stopped by the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. Highway Patrol in Oklahoma, North Texas, they were all my buddies. I used to drink with them. They'd find me out and I was drunk, and they'd put me on the back of their patrol car. They'd drive me around their tour duty. When they got ready to go home, they'd let me go. This Highway Patrolman, he stops me. He's dancing. Get out of that car and walk that white line. The only white line there is going down the middle of the highway. I said, "Norman, what if some drunk comes along and runs over me?" He said, "I feel reasonably sure that I have the only drunk between here and Medill stopped." So he told me what happened. My boss had called the district headquarters, the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, in Grand, Oklahoma. They're going throughout southern Oklahoma and North Texas on a two-way radio. If they saw me and if I was drunk, to arrest me, put me in jail, and then send someone after the company car. But Norman, being my friend, he didn't do that. He let me go. I got back to Denison, Texas, and I got up as bright and early as I possibly could the next morning. And I went out that TV station. I confronted my boss. I said, "Chuck, you have just humiliated me all over southern Oklahoma and North Texas. I can never face those people again after what you did to me. The most degrading thing that's ever happened. Had I been drunk last night, your orders were to have me arrested and thrown in jail. You can take this job and stick it, fella." Chuck apologized to me. He gave me 3 days off and a $25 a week raise. Well, I soon outgrew local television. When Will Rogers moved from the state of Oklahoma to the state of California, he said, "I have improved the IQ of both states." So I came out here to help y'all out. Don't become big-time motion picture actor movie star. They were a little bit slow in discovering me. Years so far. They better hurry up. I'm going to be retired before they find out I can work, you know. So I do some odd jobs when I got here. I got a job selling carpeting. The only job that I sold was wall-to-wall carpet, my cousin's bathroom. Then I got a job selling cars. Car. Then I got the perfect job for the practicing alcoholic. I start driving an ambulance. Look at all the free oxygen you get, you know. I went out and picked a little old lady up one time. Bent down to pick her up and looked at her. She looked at me and she said, "Shani, maybe you better lay down." Well, I got fired from that job, but at the time they were doing a TV series called Tammy, starring Debbie Watson, Frank McGrath, and Denver Pyle. They're looking for someone to play the part of Orville, Tammy's cousin. So my agent sent me out to Universal Studios, and I read for the part, and I got it, and I signed a 2-year contract doing the Tammy TV series. At that point in my life, I started doing some commercials, and I started doing some movies. And I transposed overnight from a poor Okie to a rich Okie. Now on page 87 of the Rich Okie's Handbook, it says that rich Okies do not drive Chevrolets. I got me the biggest Cadillac that one person's authorized to drive all by themselves. On page 99 of the Rich Okie's Handbook, it says rich Okies don't have common, ordinary mothers and fathers. Now my daddy, he's a good man, he's a truck driver. Sometimes he'd be, but I made him, he became a cattleman. He became an oil man. If I didn't like you, daddy's just rich. My mother, who was a cook in city school, mother became a country club socialite. If my mother, God bless her, she loves me very much. But if she found out today some of the things I had told people she had done, she'd kill me. But I wasn't happy that I'm so cook. And I always, all these things I used to dream about, this is what's going to make me happy. I always thought, if I'm making a lot of money, I'm going to be happy, and I'm not going to drink so much. At that point in my life, I was making $1,500 a week. Well, back then, that was a lot of money. You could live off of that. You really could. I was drinking more. I always thought, if I've got a good-looking girl by my side, I'm going to be happy, and I'm not going to drink so much. I had the best-looking girls that money could buy. Bought a bunch of them, too. I wasn't happy. So I painted a beautiful picture. Now I put my daddy and my mother and everything else in the front. I put old Ansel in the back. Put me in the front, put them in the back. So this is who I am. Love me this way. I was trying to paint this beautiful picture of what I thought life should be like, how I should fit into this scheme of God's plans, I was trying hard to find happiness. But not until I found you people did I find the happiness that I deserved. The happiness was inside. They told me, it's not out there. It never was out there. Were you born a sad baby? I said, no. So you were born with happiness. I had suppressed it all these many, many years, and for me to be happy, I had to be at peace with Ansel Cook. Within 2 years, they canceled Tammy TV series. They canceled me, too. They said, you shall never work at Universal Studios again for as long as you shall live, plus 8 days. But I'm happy to say, since I've been sober, I've been out there not once, but several occasions. But once I was cut free, there's no place I had to be. My agent, he couldn't find me half the time. If he did find me, I was drunk. And after I've been drinking for a little while, my eyes began receding back in my head. There was one point in my drinking career that I had to wear contact lenses to see my glasses. They didn't do horror movies then, so I didn't work very much. The only job that my agent could find for me was number two boy on the dating game. I was younger then. And that's a good job. They pay you $186 for 2 hours work, but they don't let you do it twice a year. That's $372 a year income for faxing alcoholic. I don't care how slow you say it, it's not much money. So I had to find other ways to support my habit, and I found two people who loved me very much, my mother and my daddy. And I just get on that telephone to Ardmore, Oklahoma. When you're a big-time motion picture actor, movie star, and you're credit between pictures, I have been for 7 years, I always had to call and collect. Mother, I need X numbers of dollars. Mother, I've got to have it by tomorrow, because if I don't get it, I'm going to go to jail. See, my mother couldn't stand that thought of seeing me or my brother or my adopted sister in jail. And I knew she couldn't. I knew she could. And always, next day airmail special delivery, I had how much I'd asked for. And I guess one of the hardest parts of this program, when you get sober and I got halfway honest, I'd tell my mother and my daddy that I had been to jail. Now, the first time that I went to jail, I was an invited guest at a party. The police came to quiet the party down. I jumped up and said, me, officer, I'm the one who's making all that noise, officer. Take me. Take me, officer. First time in my life, police never did what I told him to do. He handcuffed me. I told him I was only kidding. He thought it was funny. He told the jailer. The jailer thought it was funny, too. About 3 o'clock in the morning, they put me on this black and white bus. I'm so glad to realize that's not RTD colors, you know. I'm going along the streets of Hollywood. I don't know where I'm going. My mind kept saying, man, you're going to prison and you've never been to see the judge yet. Well, I end up in a place that's worse than a prison called Lincoln Heights. So you've been there. You're there about 4 or 5 years before your paperwork catches up with you, you know. I charged public drug. I got to see the judge the next day. He said, how do you plead? I said, Your Honor, I plead guilty with an explanation. Boy, was I going to stow this old judge. I knew this old judge was one step ahead of me. When he looked out there at me, he said, go ahead, boy. I said, Your Honor, I was raised in Oklahoma by a very fine, upstanding Baptist family. All my life, Your Honor, they've taught me the evils of alcohol. What do I do to mentally and physically? And last night, Your Honor, for the very first time in my life, I took a drink. I took a drink, and the remorse, the guilt so heavy in my conscience, what did my poor Baptist mother and father, if they saw me in that condition, that I knew I should be punished. And that's why I volunteered to come to jail. It was beautiful. I wish y'all could have heard it. I wish you'd listened to it a little more closely, too. I decided I'm not going to go to jail no more, and I'm too smart for that, but I'm not going to quit drinking. I'm driving along in Venice, California, minding my own business, kind of tipsy, and I misnegotiated a right-hand turn, and then overcompensated the left-hand turn, and the policeman found me and said, that's weaving. They asked me how much I had to drink to show them I was going to help them. I told them. Anything they'd ask me, I'd tell them. The old boss talked to him, nice guy, but he had a rookie as a partner, because he wrote down everything that I said, word for word. He didn't go home to his wife and say, hey, honey, let me read you what this little old Okie said tonight. He took it and gave it to the judge. They locked me up in Venice jail, charged drunk driving. Not very behooving for a big-time motion picture actor movie star to be arrested for drunk driving. We're going to get a court date and get it reduced to reckless driving. Well, we get the court date. My attorney goes in the judge's chamber to do a little plea bargaining. He reads what I've told these police officers while he's in there. He came back out a little bit pale. He said, Ansel, I would advise you to go in there, plead guilty, and hope that you don't get the electric chair. Times were getting pretty bad for big-time motion picture actor movie star. I had plastic surgery. They removed my Bank of America card, MasterCard, Diners Club, Carte Blanche. I was excommunicated from the phone company. Always getting kicked out of apartments. I was living with a girl in Bel Air, and she kicked me out. Now, that is really bad when a girl kicks you out. After all, I was giving her my body. It was younger then. Usually limp, too. Alcohol doesn't have a great starch value, you know. But I remembered her saying something as I was walking out the door, that she was damn tired of sleeping in the waterbed and we didn't own one. All this time I thought it was her and I was just too nice to say anything about it. I called a fraternity brother of mine who lives in Rolling Hills, an old drinking buddy of mine. Boy, Jim and I used to really raise some cane together in college. But see, Jim married a Mormon girl over 25 years ago. He put the plug in the jug and he hadn't had a drink since. I called him, I said, Jim, I got a problem. He said, I know you do. See, Jim knew about my alcoholism. I was the type of drunk who always wanted to commit suicide, but I never did want to die doing it. I want to share something with you. If you contemplate suicide and you're not serious, The safest thing that you can do is throw yourself under a parked car. But that's not very dramatic. There are two things that you should realize about suicide if you're not serious. If you're really serious about it, do whatever you want to do. But if you're not serious, first of all, you do not use a gun. Because once you pull that trigger, you have to be mighty fast to dodge that bullet. You take pills. But the secret to taking pills, call someone first. Don't get so carried away that you take a handful of pills and then try to dial them up. They're not at home. You call someone first, you get their solemn oath that they're on the way after you. If you live in a metropolitan area, you should allow for freeway traffic. You know, if they got into a traffic jam, that your suicide attempt could become an accidental death. You don't take the pills till you know they're there to get you. Then you got to take some pills then. Can you see how degrading it would be if you didn't take any? They run you to the hospital, the doctor pumps out your stomach, and they don't find anything. They may say, you lied to me. Next time they may lie to you, so yes, sir, I'm on the way to rescue you right now. They stop off to see Gone with the Wind or Dancing with Wolves on the way, you know. My daughter says, Jim, it's not what you think. I've got no job and I've got no money and I've got no place to live. He said, well, come on down to our house. So I put everything that I had in the back of my Cadillac. I still had a Cadillac. It didn't look like a Cadillac. I redesigned it all by myself. People get my car and say, what kind of car is this, you know? They got some special Oklahoma model here. But I moved in with Jim and his wife, Sonia, and Jim used to give me his credit card to put gas in my car, and I was conning and cheating, lying and stealing to get gasoline put in my body. And I started drinking those low-class bars down in Harbor City down there, and I had to get back to the plus bars where I was somebody. One more time, I got on that telephone to Ardmore, Oklahoma, collect. Mother, I need $1,000. And Mother, I have to have it by tomorrow. Because if I don't get it, Mom, I'm going to go to jail. I don't know what lie that I told my mother. Maybe blocked my memory forever, but the result was the same. The next day, air mail special delivery, I had $1,000 cashier's check. I got that check cashed. I took off to Chatty's in Santa Monica, where I really finished the last of my drinking. And I walked into this bar and I ordered the bartender, who incidentally is on the program now. He came with me at a meeting one time, and he's the one that served my last drink back then. Anyway, I came in, he said, hey, Anson, we haven't seen you for a long time. I said, well, no, Tom, you know, I've been back in Oklahoma taking care of my ranch. It's hard to give up. I ordered Scotch water. He set it down. It's at $1.50. I know what I've got. But I thumb through them in front of Tom one at a time. I get the last one. I said, I'm sorry, Tom, but $100 bill is the smallest thing that I've got. He said, yeah, so you got quite a little bankroll, haven't you? I said, yes, sir. You know that I just sold one of my prize bulls before I left home? I sold Tom a prize bull before I left that bar, too. I don't remember leaving it. There's a lot of bars that I don't remember leaving. There's a lot of them I don't even remember going into. I don't remember running into a parked car, which that's nothing unusual. I was a champagne parked car hitter of West Hollywood. My neighbors see me off thing, they'd park miles away and take the bus home. I ended up in the hospital at UCLA for observation for a concussion, but where I sustained the concussions in my wallet. I had just a little over $300, left out $1,000. They called my friend Jim about 5 o'clock in the morning and said, I could go home now. Would he come and get me? Jim, my buddy Marv and Emily, they know Jim and Sonia real well. I've known them since 1953, my best friends. Jim said, well, I'm in bed, and my family's in bed. Would you mind keeping him until we get up? See, Jim was not going to come and get me anymore at my convenience. He picked me up later that morning and took me back to Rolling Hills at the age of 35. Life had ended for Ansel Cook. Yeah, I tried to see, who is Ansel Cook? Ansel to me was a series of lies I lived in so many years that I actually and truly believed them. I became very suicidal because I couldn't sleep. I closed my eyes and I'd see Daddy getting up at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock. My daddy's a good man. Daddy drank, but he provided for his family. And I'd see my daddy go through a screen door back home in Ardmore, Oklahoma. And I'd see Daddy get into a semi-trailer truck loaded with gasoline. And see my daddy driving hundreds of miles every day, just beating the hell out of his body to make $1,000 for his drunken son in Los Angeles. I didn't like that. I closed my eyes again, and I'd see my mother get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I hear my mother wheeze, and I hear my mother call. My mother's asthmatic. And when I was a kid growing up in Oklahoma, they didn't know too much about asthma. And the doctor used to spend countless nights with my mother, with needles sticking in her arm, giving her adrenaline, trying to keep her alive. I've seen my mother lay on this bed and turn absolutely black and blue, gasping for breath, become very cyanotic because you just couldn't. And the doctors turned to me and my daddy and my brother. He said, I don't know if I can keep her alive tonight, but I'll try. I'll try. I'd see my mother go through the screen door back home in Ardmore, Oklahoma. I'd see mother pull her coat up around her neck to ward off that cold Oklahoma air because in the wintertime it'll bite right through you. And I see my mother walk into a schoolhouse and see her stand over a hot stove all day long cooking to make $1,000 for her drunken son in Los Angeles. It wasn't a pretty sight. Suicide. The only way out of this thing that I can honestly justify ever being here. But a moment of clarity came to me as it's come to you. And I look back now, if I hadn't grabbed that brass ring when it came by, it may never have come my way again. But I did, and at one moment, I turned to Sonia, Jim's wife. I said, Sonia, I'm sick. I need help. That afternoon, she had me to her little hospital, and they locked me up in psychiatric ward. I got out to put me to a crisis because of an alcoholic counselor. And she kept saying, well, you should go to AA. I shouldn't go to AA. I'm not alcoholic. I just got drunk because. The main reason I got drunk, the fact is I am alcoholic. I can't metabolize alcohol fast. I drink, and once I take the first drink, my mind says, this time you will be able to control and enjoy your drink. And that's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. I fought going to AA tooth and nail. One afternoon session, Mary Jane turned this hippie-looking drunk addict to his drunk and rode a motorcycle. She said, Gene, what are you doing at this meeting? She said, nothing. She said, take this boy to an AA meeting. So they strapped me, a big-time motion picture actor movie star, on the back of a motorcycle, behind a hippie-looking drunk addict, and took me to an AA meeting. I just knew AA, my picture of AA was one room, a lot of people standing and sitting around, and one single light hanging down, and everybody sits in. And somebody gets the urge to drink, and everybody holds him down. But I walked in there, as a good-looking blonde reading chapter 5, said, if you want what we have, oh, God, I wonder what she had. And I'd have gone to Annalise to get it, too. Bring the body. The mind will follow. I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous on March 20th, 1971, and I came in here with all the qualifications for being here. From that day to this day, I have met the only problem of staying here, the desire to stop drinking. That's all it's asked, just the desire to stop drinking. But I came in with the facade of, this is who I am, love me this way. But the people in AA love me in spite of the lies I told to. I was still trying to be something that I wasn't. They took an interest in me. They helped me find a job. I got a job driving an ice cream truck in West Hollywood. Used to ring my chimes all over that area. My agent, he started talking to me again. He said, I have an interview for you at Warner Bros. In Burbank. I drove my ice cream truck out there. I read for the part, and I didn't get it. Wasn't a total loss, though. I sold 6 Cheerios, 3 popsicles, 8 popsicles, and a half pint of Tutti Frutti. I became very despondent because I didn't get it. So something better would come along. It wasn't long after that. I went to Utah, 3 months working in a Western movie. We finished filming, I'm walking to the airport in Salt Lake City with a couple of Okie buddies of mine, Ronnie Howard and his dad, Rance. I said, Rance, would you take these few things back to L.A. for me? He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going home to Oklahoma. And I called my mother and my daddy, and I asked them if they would meet me in Dallas, Texas. When I stepped off that airplane the first time in 9 years, my mother and daddy had seen their baby boy come home, and he was sober. At that point in my life, I was able to make a lot of amends to my mother and my father and tell them how sorry I am for denying them watching me grow up. See, as a kid, when I was growing up in junior high and high school, I couldn't be with my daddy and my mother. I had to be out with these friends who I thought were the shakers and the movers of Ardmore, Oklahoma, being somebody that I wasn't. I came back to L.A. because I was having problems with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a thing called rigorous honesty. I could not be honest. The things they said don't do, I did. Don't get emotionally involved in your first year of sobriety. My God, I went through 3 alcoholic girls, 2 normal girls, anything to stand still. Besides sheep, we were cattle ranchers. It was always the same. This time it's true love. This time we're going to ride off in the sunset on matching palomino's. Happy trails to you. But come sundown, there was always someone else on my horse. I went to my sponsor after most involvement 2 years. 2 years. Did a lot of things they said, don't do. I was doing them. 2 years. Miserable. God, I was miserable. I said, Bob, why can't I find the peace and the freedom on this program? People last time I got. Bob, I haven't drank in over 2 years. There are people who will come in here 2 weeks. Feel better than I do. Where are the rewards of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, why don't you work the steps? I said, that'll help me, Bob. Let's take an inventory right now. Ask me. He said, you got to write that down. I said, I'm not ashamed to tell you anything, Bob. You just ask me. He said, you have to write it down. I said, how do you get started? He said, where do you have the most problem in life? I said, women. He said, well, start there. So the first 35 pages is my 418-page inventory. There's a prayer in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in chapter 5 in the prelude to step 3 that I had read and read and read and read, but I don't think I ever did see it. And to paraphrase it, it says, God, relieve me of the bonds of self, that I may do thy will, not mine. And that night, with all the earnestness and sincerity I could muster up in this oaky frame of mine, I got down on my hands and my knees, and I asked God to relieve the bonds of Ansel Cook, that I could be set free to carry out his will for me for the remainder of my days. That night I came to believe in a power greater than myself. And you know, with just a little bit of work, God, as I understand God, has set me free. Because I've never been as happy, joyous, and free in all my life as I am today. The things I sat in bars and dreamed about doing today, I do. I used to sit in bars and dream about flying an airplane. But today I can fly an airplane. Some people who have flown with me think differently. Kicking my good friend Don over. Don used to have a lot of hair before he started flying with me. The most involvement today, I'm most involved with a beautiful young girl, my wife. For the first time in my life, age of 38, I got married. For the first time in my life, age of 40, I became a father. Now I got the most precious 15-year-old, she'll be 16 next Thursday. Emily? 16. Hear that? Grace? She's a sweetheart. Being alcoholic as I am, one's good, two's got to be twice as good. So 13 years ago last January, the good Lord blessed us with another girl. So I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old daughter and a beautiful wife who have never seen their father and their husband take a drink, and I'm grateful for that. My kids are different than most kids. They go to birthday parties, they come home, they give their birthday, everybody sings happy birthday, my kids keep coming by. I was doing a movie called Roadhouse. I came home one day and my daughter said, who's the star of the picture, Dad? I said, well, Ben Gazzara and Sonny Elliott, a new guy that's from Texas. I never had seen Dirty Dancing. And I said, he's a real nice guy. I had lunch with him today. His name's Patrick Swayze. Well, they screamed and they hollered. And they said, we're going to go to work with you tomorrow, Daddy. And I said, no. I said, you're in school and you can't go. I said, no, Daddy, we're making good grades. And I said, nah. Well, anyway, they had a good time out there. Now, I love to smoke Pall Mall cigarettes. I smoked 3 packages of Pall Malls a day for 36 years. Not the same 3 packages. I want you to know I smoke a lot, not slow, okay? Now, we're going down to get Daddy some cigarettes because Daddy's a much nicer human being when he's got cigarettes. We walk along, my oldest daughter, Rochelle, she's a beautiful girl. Gosh, she's got the prettiest brown eyes, and she looked at me and said, Daddy, would you do me a favor? And I said, sure, honey, anything you'd like to do, you just ask me. She says, Daddy, would you not smoke anymore? I said, what an order, I can't go through with it. But I had to try, and that was 5 years ago when I was talking over the 10th. I didn't buy any that night. And I bought any sense because I want my kids to know that I love them very much. And I'll do anything in the world for them. I read this story about this man who was watching television and drinking his beer, and his little boy came in and said, Daddy, would you come outside and play ball? The dad said, 15 minutes, son, give me another 15 minutes. And the little boy walked away. You know, 15 minutes to a child is an eternity. And he walked back in there 15 minutes later. He said, 15 minutes, you're up, Dad. Come on out and play. And his father remembered the promise. They started walking out, and as he's walking out, he sees a magazine. This magazine is open to a page that shows a picture of the world in it. So the father reached down, he tore that page out. Then he tore it into a lot of little bitty pieces, and he gave it to his son. He said, son, this is the jigsaw puzzle. I want you to put this puzzle together. And when it's all put together and there's not a piece of it out of place, bring it back to me. And I promise you, we will go outside and play. We'll be able to walk away with all these pieces of paper, you know. 5 minutes later, he came back in. So here it is, Dad. It's all put together. His father looked at that thing in total amazement. He just could not understand it. He said, son, so how'd you do that? The little boy looked up at him with great admiration. He said, well, Daddy, on the other side of that page, there was a picture of a man. And when I put that man together, the world just seemed to fall into place. See, when God put this man together, my world just fell into place. I work more than I work in a long time. A lot of y'all may know I do all of Stuart Anderson Black Angus restaurant commercials. I herd snow crab down from Alaska. I'm one of the few cowboys you know who can rope shrimp 6-7 at a time. For 5 years I played the part of Miles called The Little House on the Prairie. I was going down to Mexico, did a picture of Jeff Bridges, with Burt Reynolds and Liza Minnelli and Gene Hackman called Lucky Lady, and the whole time that I was down there, they made me keep my shirt on so tell Burt and I apart. We look a lot alike in a dark room. I was in Alabama. That's where I worked on the picture of Jeff Bridges, Sally Fields, and Arnold Schwarzenegger called Stay Hungry. Of course, I made Arnold look bad. You know, I like to make meetings. I was just in the Philippines doing a movie over there with Kathryn Bach and Don Swayze and Sam Jones called Driving Force. And I like to make meetings. Wherever I am, AA is my life. So I was making a meeting in Birmingham, Alabama. First night I got down there. And that's where I found out they don't do meetings the same all over the country, you know. I went to this meeting, and the girls going to lead it, close the meeting, and lead us in the Lord's Prayer, and I jumped up, boy, a big Hollywood star. I grabbed this old boy's hand. He was about a half a head taller than I was, and he stood there. Fella. Now, you might do that in Hollywood. but we don't in Birmingham. I let y'all know I'm a versatile actor. I've always played the part of Oklahoma Farmers. Last year, I broke that mold. I was up in Calgary, Canada, and I was doing a movie of the week up there called American Harvest with Wayne Rogers and Earl Holliman. And I played the part of an Alaska farmer. A new field has opened up to me in sobriety. I'm a model. You too can have a body like this. If you neglect it. I've got to grant you, since I quit smoking, I did put a little weight on, and my wife was really getting on to about getting fat. I said, honey, when you've got the kind of equipment that I've got, you should build a shed over it. She wanted to know where I kept the equipment while I was building the shed. Not fighting at all, you know. I stepped out of the shower the other day and standing in the bedroom there, and my wife said, "What is that?" I said, "That's my birthday suit." What do you think about it? She said, "Well, it wouldn't look so bad if you just press it." I was a centerfold in an issue about her news. We are so fortunate, we in AA. But we suffer from Z that's going to kill us. But if you're new here tonight and you're new on the program, from this moment on, you never have to take another drink for as long as you want to. As long as you live, you don't have to take that drink. Before you got here, the choice was not given to you, but today you have that choice. We have a choice on a daily basis, contingent upon our spiritual well-being. Or whether we want to live with disease or we want to die from this disease. Now my brother Richard, y'all would have liked Richard. Richard didn't drink. One of the nicest kids you'd ever want to meet. Never harmed anybody. But Richard suffered from terminal disease. At the age of 40, my only brother died of cancer. But see, I live my disease because you people have shown me how to live. On March 20th, 1971, when I came through the doors, the old man had a beach club over there. There's a group of people who reached out their hands and they took my hand and they said, "Welcome, friend." And they were friends. I didn't deserve the friendship, but they were my friends. There's also that group of people who put their arms around, you know, Grace and Sharp, the people I love very, very much. They put their arms around you and they held you close and said, "You know, I love you." And there's a whole different meaning of love. I never understood love like that. Because I didn't understand it, I couldn't return it. I think the greatest thing they gave me on March 20th, 1971, when I walked through the doors of Manhattan Beach Club, was they gave me hope. At that point in my life, there was no hope. It was my darkest hour. A. Halpin said in the poem, "The Shop Shy Lad," said, "Ale, man, ale is the thing to drink for the man that's afraid to think. Look into the pewter's pot and see the world as the world is not." For 21 years, I looked into a pewter's pot and the world was not there. And I almost killed myself trying to belong to it. But today, for the last 20 plus years, I look at the world's real. And I'm happy to be in the world I live in today, and the place that I am in right now. I was going to Oklahoma after emotional involvement. Emotional involvement could get me back to Oklahoma faster than American Airlines could, I'll guarantee you. My sponsor told me at this last emotional involvement that I had prior to getting married here. He said, "You know, you got to make amends to that girl." I said, "Bob, you know, I gave her a ring, she gave me the finger." A little Oklahoma humor there. So now you got to make amends to her. So I went out and bought some stationery. Good stationery. Dixie had little wood grains in it. You know, real nice looking. You couldn't even see through it. That thing cost about $3.50, I think, something like that. It's expensive. I said, dude, whatever your name is, I hope that you're living as high on the hog as a pig you turned out to be. And my sponsor thought that was derogatory. Shows you how little he knows. Of course, I'd have hated to see the letter she might have written me, you know. Then I'm going to Oklahoma and tell my mother those California girls did it to me one more time. So Bob picked me up about 2 hours before I had to be at the airport. We were having a cup of coffee at Bob's house. He said, how much are drinks in Oklahoma? I said, I don't know, Bob, 50, 75 cents. He said, if you decide you want to drink, let me buy your first drink for you. And he gave me this dollar bill. He said, you know, I love you in the fellowship of the program. Because of my love for you, I want to give you the very best dollar that I have. So would you look at the dollar bill? This dollar, it's a silver certificate. It's backed by silver. It's not a Federal Reserve note. Bob said, that's the best dollar I can possibly give you. He said, look and see when this dollar was minted. It was minted in 1935. Now, that was the year that I was born. Before I go to my birth, that was the year that Alcoholics Anonymous was born. He said, look on the back side of your dollar, right above the one that's printed in God We Trust. On this particular series, nowhere is God's name printed on this dollar bill. Bob said, if you notice, God's name isn't on that dollar bill. Now, if you decide you're going to drink again, you're not trusting God. You're trusting Ansel Cook. If your trust be with Ansel Cook, then God's name should not be on the dollar that will eventually take your life. So look in that right hand corner. See that pyramid? He said, that's symbolic of the triangle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Unity, service, recovery, the three legacies of AA. He said, count the layers of bricks it takes to make the pyramid. There are 12 rows of bricks. Bob said, that could be the 12 steps to recovery. At the very top, there's a Masonic eye. He said, as long as you're taking these steps within this framework to the best of your ability, I will promise you one thing, and it will always hold true. You will never be alone. There will always, always be someone at the top who's looking out for you. He gave me this dollar bill, but I had to promise Bob that if I decided I want a drink, I'd use this dollar to buy my first drink with. Well, I've still got this dollar bill, and I'm going to keep this dollar bill as long as I can practice the principles of this program in all my daily affairs. Not for an hour and a half when I'm at an AA meeting, or not when I'm having coffee with an AA friend, but all my daily affairs. I'm going to keep this dollar bill as long as I believe in the simple ABCs of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. A, I am alcoholic, and I cannot manage my own life. B, thus far, there has been no human power that has been able to relieve me of my alcoholism. And C is the one that fills me with so much gratitude, because it was in rooms like this, and with people like you, that I was able to find a God who could and a God who would, just as long as I asked.